Welcome to episode 1018. It's Thursday, March 19th, and you're listening to the Geek of Geek News Central. This show is sponsored in part by GoDaddy.com and listeners like you. Pick up a domain name for just $1.49 or get $1 a month economy hosting with a free domain at GoDaddy.com. All my GoDaddy specials can be found at GeekNewsCentral.com/GoDaddy. Start supporting this show today by becoming a GNC Insider at GeekNewsCentral.com/insider. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Hey, folks, got a great show lined up for you tonight. And the question is, where is E.T.? Got a great show. And I think I flipped it a little too soon. Strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go, no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Todism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
5.
Button, who's got the button?
4.
There's no cause for alarm.
3.
Everybody hold on to something.
2.
Just press the button.
1.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to Geek News Central. Course, again, my name is Todd Cochran, and glad to be here. I tell you, you know what I did is I had my hand on the TriCaster flipper bar. And I started to pull on it a little bit, and I shouldn't have done that because it was kind of overlaid with the graphic, and you guys could probably hear the start of the intro starting out. I didn't realize that just pulling it that far would do it, so I apologize everyone watching the video, but for the audio folks, you guys are like, but we didn't hear nothing. So everyone, welcome to the show, and I got a great podcast for you tonight. Lots of tech talk, lots of great articles, kind of a weird eclectic mix of stuff. So it'll be a lot of fun going through it. And, you know, as always, a very, very, very warm welcome to the Ohana. And, of course, out of here, this show's done out of Hawaii, and the Ohana is the family. And so I want to welcome the entire family to the podcast. And if you're brand new, thanks for checking out the show for the very first time. And if you're a once-in-a-while listener, we want to make you a all-the-time listener. And you can do that real simply by going over to geeknewscentral.com. And when you're over on the website, it's a piece of cake. Just get subscribed to the show. And all you got to do is click on the podcast subscribe link or the RSS feed link if you're an Android user, and basically load this show into your favorite podcasting app. If you don't know how to subscribe via Android or via iTunes, there's a button on there that says more subscription options. And it really, that's going to take you to the page that's just going to give you a step-by-step on how to do this and give you a couple of suggestions for some applications to use, Beyond Pod for Android or Podcast Republic or two that I really like. And, you know, there's basically just what I'm telling you here and in instructions on that page. So we definitely want you to get subscribed to the show. That's really the most important part. We got a newsletter as well. That newsletter contains everything that I'm going to talk about during the show tonight. And we want you to get subscribed to the newsletter. That way, when I email that out, you'll have all the links directly in your inbox. But there's multiple ways of connecting with the show. Emailing me, geeknews@gmail.com. Of course, you can tweet me at geeknews. There's links to a Facebook profile, Google+. Really, there's no excuse. If you want to reach out to the show, you can do so very, very easily. And really, that's all there is to it, and getting connected and staying connected and becoming part of the Ohana here and being a regular listener to the show. Well, I tell you, this show, of course, is sponsored in part by our good friends over at GoDaddy.com. And GoDaddy's been here for many, many years, and you guys continue to knock it out of the ballpark and picking up products and services each month and keeping them a sponsor here. You know, our March GoDaddy specials include $1 a month of managed WordPress hosting with a free domain name. All you got to do is use the promo code PRESS4. Or again, you get that .com for $1.49 by using the promo code GEEK149. The savings at GoDaddy continue with $1 economy hosting with the free domain by using promo code GEEKS12. All these codes are on my GoDaddy promo code page at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. Don't forget about the website builder, free domain, and a Microsoft Outlook email address for $1 a month for 12 bucks for a whole year. And this is a product that they're really spending a lot of time on and is really kind of going to be the go-to platform for those of you that have a business. You're looking to have some turnkey stuff that's really going to get you up and going quickly. So the website builder, basically, tools that they have are fantastic. You can integrate shopping carts and all kinds of stuff just really with a click of a button. So that program is available, again, to start off with for $1 a month for 12 months. And using a promo code GNCGOT, GNCGOT, GNCGOT. So pick those all up. Of course, we've got some 50% off new hosting plans, 50% off 12-month website builders. Again, a $1 a month economy hosting, a $1 a month WordPress hosting, and the $1.49.com. Of course, again, all these specials can be found at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. Well, I thank GoDaddy for being a longtime sponsor here, taking care of the show, taking care of me, keeping the lights on, and allowing us to do what we do and do it very well, I hope, or I think. And thanks for GoDaddy for being a continued sponsor here at GNC. Okay, so let me just go through a few things. The envelopes are in the mail. They actually left the mailbox today. So cash is on the way. That leaves me with one last task. And I think I'll be caught up and even with the audience. They actually would have went out yesterday if I'd have remembered to take the stupid things in the mailbox. But so everyone that was part of our GNC 1000 winners list, definitely keep an eye on your mailbox. Those envelopes are there. I included some stickers, some business cards, a little letter for you. So just be aware that that is that's coming. And our Canadian listener, make sure you let me know whether or not you get your envelope too. I put double the postage on there that I think that it needed, $2.20. Hopefully it gets to you in Canada with no issue, but keep me advised. Well, you know, what's going on right now for me is the focus is shifting. And my team at Raw Voice is focus is shifting. In the last 2 weeks, we've hired administrative assistant. Mackenzie is on board. She's been drinking from the fire hose, getting caught up. She's taken over affiliate program, and I'm turning more stuff loose with her every day, and she's been going through our product line and really tearing it apart and looking at it from a newcomer perspective, and sometimes it's good to get that nice look. We also successfully hired a programmer this week. The young lady will start on Monday, and I look forward to having her as part of our team. So really ramping up, adding bodies to the team because we have a list of stuff to do this year that is literally a mile long. And I'm going to have two major, one minor announcement at New Media Expo /NAB. We briefed the team, the entire team, yesterday on those announcements on what we're going to be sharing with the community. So my focus at this point from, during the day in normal business hours type of stuff is really focused on being ready for and having those products ready for New Media Expo and NAB and what's going to go down there. At the same time, I've been working with Don Bain, the gadget professor. Him and I are working on a brand new package for folks that want to get into the video space and don't have the type of dollars that, that's often needed to start video programming with multiple cameras. We're putting together a package that, in my opinion, is going to be pretty incredible. It's going to be a great package. It's going to serve the majority of content creators that we work with and at a price that is not going to make them fall over and faint. So Don and I have been working on that package. We should have some announcements soon on exactly how that's going to lay out. At the same time, we've got the ProGear.Guru site is essentially ready. There's not any content in it yet, but just turned the team loose yesterday. So we're going to start to filtering content in as NAB vendors start feeding me stuff. We're going to dump that right into progear.guru, and we'll be ramping up that site and basically talking about some of this type of gear that I have right here in the studio. So that's kind of what's going on. But I just wanted to, you know, make you guys aware of some of the things that are happening here and where my focus is going to be through really the middle of April. And then come off of NAB, we've got a couple of things that we've got planned right off the get-go from coming out of that show. And then we have a huge, huge, huge initiative to be ready to announce at Podcast Movement that's going to be going on in Dallas later this year. So very full year. Team is going to be very, very busy. Got a lot of code to write. And I'm really excited with where things are headed. So I know that oftentimes you guys don't like me talking too much about the podcasting business side of things, but I live and breathe this stuff, folks. I really do. I love this show and producing this tech show for you. But at the same time, you know, my passion is really in the in making sure content creators are able to have the tools they need to do what they need to do and basically build their businesses as well. So we're going to continue to do that. I think we're going to have a PowerPress release tomorrow or the next day. We've got an update, some bug fixes and stuff to get in place. But it's been pretty good. And actually, the office is still clean. That's saying something here of the studio. And so I'm getting ready to, obviously, I'm flying out Saturday night, going to the East Coast. I'll be there all next week. But there will be two shows, two audio-only shows next week, while I'm in the Washington, D.C. area. And I don't know what kind of coat to pack yet. So I got to look at the Weather Channel and see what it is. I think I'm just going to go with a heavy winter coat the way it's been acting. But some people say it's been, you know, the weather's been all over the map. So I, you know, I don't want to pack two coats. But anyway, looking forward to being on the East Coast for a few days. But again, two shows next week on the road, audio only, no video. As we do now when we travel, we don't do any video. We just do audio programming. Okay, so I think that wraps me up in just a chit-chat. Don't forget over on geeknewscentral.com that this show is not the only show that is part of the GNC family. And I think it's important for you to remember that because we got a lot of great programming over here. You know, you've got the New Media Show. We've got Health Tech Weekly. We've got Don Bain, the Gadget Professor. We've got Todd Ani with the Elder Divide. And we got Langley with the Robot Underpants. And as I said, we're going to be introducing the brand new site, the progear.guru site. And actually, I thought I put a menu item on the website. I don't think, what happened here? Did we not have a... Oh, that's very, very odd because I thought I already put it on Geek News Central site. Maybe I put it on Don's site, but I didn't put it on mine. So let me go over to the Gadget Professor. Oh, yeah, it's there. That's weird. So anyway, the Progear News and Reviews at progear.guru is up and running. But again, no content on there yet. All right, let's go ahead and get into the stack of content tonight. And I do have a bunch of stuff to talk about. I'm going to share with you guys a bunch of stuff tonight. If you find value of what I produced for you or what I talk about tonight and you save some money and some things you're going to do, definitely consider coming back and supporting the show by becoming a GNC Insider at geeknewscentral.com/insider. Those of you in the watching live, definitely jump in the chat room and come over and say hello and hang out with me. I know it's late. With the 6-hour difference now between the East Coast and us, not very many people are going to be up at 2 in the morning watching. But I want to talk just a little bit about extraterrestrials. And this is a little bit geeky, techy, and science fiction-y at the same time. But there's a new research out that contends that the Milky Way alone is flush with billions of potential habitable planets. And that's just one sliver of the entire universe. You know, I think all of us have wondered, are we alone? And as some of that one famous movie says, if, you know, it's a pretty big place. Or what did she say? I'm going to get it wrong here. Definitely. But anyway, there's a lot out there. And if we're the only ones here, you know, a pretty big waste of space. But if you think about the enormity or and the size of the universe, or even the size of our galaxy, it can boggle the mind. And it's to the point, you know, sometimes I think that I go back to the Men in Black series or Matrix. It just makes you wonder sometimes with the enormity of it all and how big or how vast space really is. It you know, sets you back in your seat just a little bit to think about that we are, you know, we're just a molecule in the scheme of things, you know. And I wouldn't say we're a parasite, but, you know, we could be equated to that, you know, just how big the whole enormity of the galaxy is. And, you know, we've talked about UFOs on this show. I've talked about my experience with UFOs growing up and my two separate sightings that make me convinced that if we're not alone, someone's been watching us and they're just waiting for us to grow up and to get to the point where either we need to be saved or we're lunch, one of the two. You know, and it could come to that. Someone come and farm us. You know, you just don't know. But then again, because space is so big and the physics required to get from point A to point B in a relatively short period of time is way, way, way beyond us at this point. And maybe it's way beyond everyone else. So the question then really becomes is, even though we have this quest and many of us have this curiosity, is there someone else out there? Do we really want to run into those folks? You know, because if they come here, they are definitely going to be many, 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 many times more advanced than us. And who knows what type of resources they need or will want. Heck, they could show up with a starship as big as the Earth. If you think about having to travel like that, who knows? But at the same time, the scientists now estimate that there are 40 billion Earth-side planets in the habitable zone of sun-like or red dwarf stars in the Milky Way alone, and the estimate of 100 billion to 200 billion, with the estimate of 100 billion to 200 billion total galaxies in the universe are accurate. And if the average galaxy has roughly the same number of Earth cousins as the Milky Way, then the chances are we are the only planet with life are more like 1 in 6 trillion. And to offer a frame of reference on that, for that number, consider the amount of sand on Earth's beaches. Jason Marshall, a.k.a. the Math Dude, has calculated that there are roughly 5 sextillion grains of sand on all our planet's beaches combined. So take every grain of sand on every beach on Earth, and you can begin to actually visualize how many planets we're talking about that have potential life living within what we consider, in our definition, an habitable zone. So, you know, then again, okay, if there's that many, why are we haven't been overrun by aliens at this point? And who's to say that we weren't planted here, or the physics are just impossible for everyone? You know, and it's pretty hard to comprehend all this. You know, the distances alone are just incomprehensible almost in itself. And, you know, cosmic math, if you think about it, has a line of zeros that just go that way and almost never stop. And so if you've really thought, sit back and think about it a little bit, it will almost boggle your mind. And I know people of faith may not, you know, look at it this way, but it's pretty incredible space out there, and most of us cannot comprehend even a small midget of the information that's available on, you know, why, you know, everything that is, you know, how the planets form and all this stuff, black holes, you know, we all have a little bit, but we are just so, we're so infants in the whole universe knowledge path. Will we survive long enough to be able to travel to another planet in a habitable zone is a good question. But just to think that they, these new estimates that are coming out, that again, there could be six sextillion is the number. And basically a sextillion is a one with 21 zeros. That's a big number. And so what do you guys think? I want to hear from you a little bit. I want, you know, this is just a little bit of a, get you guys mind warped a little bit here. Do you believe that we will ever be able to interstellar or interplanetary travel? And I shouldn't say interplanetary, it's interstellar travel. Will we ever be able to do that? Are we just an ant farm? Do you think we just got lucky being where we are, sitting between, how far we're out from the sun and not being boiled off or being, you know, too far off to be, you know, a frozen mass? So the question is, for the rest of you, give me just a little insight. What do you guys think? And drop me down a couple of sentences. Do you think I'm nuts? Do you think that the scientists are nuts? Do you ponder about this at all? Do you think that we've been visited by E.T.? So really, the question is, where is E.T.? And we've been listening for a while, but we haven't heard nothing for sure with SETI. But of course, the SETI project's only looking in a small smidgen of the sky as well. So, it's a big, big problem. And we have, I think, two small brains to figure it out at this point. But anyway, just kind of a little mind bender here to start off and talk with. You know, and as a kid, I remember talking with my mom. We were talking about the pyramids and all the mystery that surrounds the pyramids and ancient Egypt. And I think as we all have a pretty good handle on that at this point, but still there is still some mystery out there on, you look at the pyramids and the purpose, and was there any additional help given to those, you know, the Egyptians at the time to build the pyramids? Was there any alien involvement? There's always been suspicion that there has been, but, there's really no incidental proof, but a lot of people are of the tendency to believe that it could. And I'm even thinking, I could think, maybe just a little bit, but anyway, if you want to add that into the conversation, it's good as well. All right, so let's go actually and get out of the science stuff here for a little bit, talk a little tech. Google. Wow, oh wow. Google has, I'm getting, this is interesting. My wife's texting me what I'm supposed to tell the alarm people. What? She's in the other room. Okay, so Google reportedly blackmailed websites into giving it content for free. So a new Wall Street Journal report details anti-competitive practices by the company. In 2012, the FTC investigated Google to determine whether the company's monopoly on search market violated antitrust laws. The commission ultimately accepted a settlement with the search giant, but a confidential FTC report obtained reveals how deeply divided the commission was over whether to sue. As part of the settlement, Google agreed to make minor changes to its business practices and argued that the report did not show wrongdoing, but key FTC officials, after collecting 9 million documents in the course of the investigation, wanted to take direct legal action against the company. And here's why. According to the report, for one example, Google took content from companies like Yelp, TripAdvisor, and Amazon. In later cases, Google lifted product rankings and placed them in their own search results for those products. So when the companies complained to Google about the process, Google threatened to remove them entirely from search results. The journal quotes this section of the report: "It is clear the Google threat was intended to produce and did produce the desired effect, which was to coerce Yelp and TripAdvisor into backing down. The commission ultimately had Google agree to let websites opt out of the process." So basically what was going on was Google was taking the content, again, from Yelp, TripAdvisor, and Amazon, and remanipulating it and using it in their own, basically, results, stuff that they were going to link to. And that is, like, wow, really? So if Amazon had a product review, they were taking the product review ranking and using that as part of their information they're putting on the Google search results, and not necessarily are basically giving credit to Amazon or linking back. That journal highlights two other concerns from the FTC. For one, Google reportedly restricted websites that published its search results from collaborating with competing search engines. In other cases, Google refused to allow data obtained from its ad campaigns to be used in campaigns with other services. According to a report, Larry Page personally asked this process to continue before the FTC eventually convinced Google to shut it down. As for search results themselves, according to the report, as quoted in the journal, Google adopted a strategy of demoting or refusing to display links to certain vertical websites in highly commercial categories. Wow, 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 wow. So this journal piece is pretty, doesn't make Google look out to be not evil, makes them look to be pretty evil. And I've always said, Google has a lot of power. A lot. How many of you, instead of typing in a web URL, type in, okay, like if you're going to come to this site, I bet you a lot of you do Geek News Central or Geek News, and type that in and then click the link that in the search results. I bet very few of you actually type in geeknewscentral.com and come to the website. So when Google demotes or pushes someone down in the search results, it can have a detrimental effect. The show notes on Geek News Central, until we figured a way to arbitrate that, caused major problems with some changes to Google, basically search results, or their algorithm and how they were ranking pages. I mean, we took a major, major hit, and it took me a while to recover. If you guys remember, I was putting show notes on another website until we figured out how to make it so that Google wouldn't penalize me for the show notes the way they are today on geeknewscentral.com. So, they have a lot of power. And when you're counting on 20, 25,000 hits a day to come from Google search, and basically, if you think about, from my perspective, on my site, it's when folks come in, they either read an article, or maybe are drawn into a specific, drawn in by a specific piece. Hopefully then at the on the website, they say, hey, this guy's got a podcast, and they click to subscribe. A small percentage do, and that's what it takes. That's how a lot of people find the show, is they come to the website for the first time. Oh, there's a show there. Maybe they see a link to some media, and they click on it and listen, and then subscribe. And over time, over 10 years of that, it's allowed the audience to continue to grow and grow and grow. And a few percentage points of people that come in that convert to being listeners is highly critical. If my search traffic slowed down, or the number of folks coming to the website slowed down, that would definitely impact show growth. The biggest amount of show growth comes from you guys when you're actually sharing it with your friends and people that you know and telling about this quirky geek that you listen to twice a week. That is way we get the most of the new listeners, and many of you have been referred by someone else, or if you're lucky, maybe you found me some through a Google search. But Google has this ability to make a company basically be destroyed easily just by a little tweak. And if they were doing these types of activities, can you imagine the pressure against Amazon and Yelp, and it makes you want to use those guys' apps a little more and show them a little more support. So anyway, link will be up in the show notes. You guys can read the Wall Street Journal report. It's just wow. Okay, and a little more legal news. The Department of Justice is sneaking in a policy that basically is not good in regards to the Fourth Amendment. The rules for how the Department of Justice tracks down criminals in the digital age are woefully arcane, but the DOJ's recent proposed changes to update those rules, according to the EFF and many others, go way too far. Many times, rules updates within agencies do not get any press because they're boring. But under the auspices of probable cause, this rule change would give FBI agents the power to install tracking malware on computers all over the world without telling people they'd started surveillance. Even though it looks like a minor rule change, proposal would make it much easier for FBI agents to get warrants on computers without first figuring out their exact location. It gives judges much more flexibility on the handling of handing out remote search warrants outside of their jurisdiction. And that would give federal agents way more power to search computers. This proposal isn't just the DOJ, Department of Justice, being big brotherly for no reason. Remote computer searches are difficult to execute right now, and that's an obstacle for combating digital crime and hunting criminals who use anonymizing software. This is a real problem and something that needs to be addressed, but not this way. This is just like using a nuke instead of a sniper rifle, and it's going to blow up privacy rights. So the vague language of these rules could galvanize an avalanche of covert government surveillance by making it totally okay in certain situations to search people's computers without even letting them know, and that's a violation of the Bill of Rights. And now, if they're going to come and look at something, they're going to knock on your door, hand you a warrant, or they're going to bust your door down, hand you the warrant, and seize your computers. But the way they're going to do this now is basically they're going to be able to install malware remotely on a suspect's computer. Now, it could help the FBI hunt down botnets and robot networks, that type of stuff. But this is kind of scary here. To make matters worse, the FBI won't have to confirm that a computer is within the United States border before it starts digging. If someone is using Tor and there's no way to figure out where their computer is actually located, the rule change will let agents search first without notification. And if it turns out a computer is in, say, let's say, Iceland, the search will already be carried out. Sovereignty be damned. Now, that's going to upset countries. And this is going to be a big, big mess. So this is a mess that might become official as soon as judicial community, who has already approved of the changes to what's known as Rule 41, since a proposal got its first approval, it's now subject to review by something called the Standing Committee on Rules of Practice and Procedures. From there, the Supreme Court will have to take a look. And unless Congress acts, the changes go into effect as soon as December 2016. So, in response to a deluge of comments arguing against the new rules, the Department of Justice issued a memo that says groups that saw this as an expansion of warrants powers was misreading the text of the proposal or misunderstanding the current law. And a lot of people are saying, yeah, right. The EFF alone is very, very concerned about this and what this could mean. So, you know, it is pretty interesting here what they're going to do, but they're essentially trying to make it much easier for FBI agents to go out and do search warrants, you know, and you really not even need, you know, a jurisdictional, you know, they don't have to come to a Hawaii court. Or they don't have to come to, you know, they can be in Washington, D.C., and they could log into a computer in Japan. This is what is a big, big change here. So I'll have the link up to this in the show notes. You guys can take a peek, but just be aware that this could be coming down the pike. Well, Verizon apparently has decided it doesn't want to fight alone the new net neutrality rules. They were kind of the scapegoat last time. Well, they kind of brought it upon themselves. But they're basically not going to fight this without help from their friends. So what they're going to do is basically, I think they're pooling some money together, and trade groups like the CTIA and the NCTA will wade into the fight with arms, you know, basically with arms flailing. According to Reuters, Big Red, a.k.a. Verizon, won't lead the battle to avoid drawing any fire individually. So in other words, they figured out that the last time they did this, they become the butt of everyone's ire. But presumably the company worked out a deal that basically is going to help their trade group. Basically, their trade groups are going to do all this dirty work for them. So we'll see when the lawsuits drop, how it's actually worded and who actually drops them. There's a very, very, very cool and jaw-dropping demo for some VR stuff. And when you guys see this, and I wish I could play it on the show, if this is where virtual reality stuff is headed, you guys are going to be blown away. There's a some folks called Magic Leap. They got a pile, I mean an absolute pile of money. Google's multi-million dollar investment in augmented reality startup Magic Leap appears to be paying off. It's paying off, and they've showed a demo reel. The fledging AR firm shows off what a year and a half and a half a billion dollars can accomplish. That includes productivity functions like being able to access both websites and desktop apps from airborne virtual icons. There's also the promise of an immersive shooter game using physical weapons as its controllers and the world around you as an environment. This is nuts. I'm serious. When you see this video, you're really not going to believe what they've been able to do here. And I'm wowed. I want to play with this very, very badly. I'm just here to tell you, this is going to be cool. And it could be game changing. I mean, you thought we were zombies on our phones. Now, wait till we all have VR headsets on. This is going to be awesome. I don't know how they've been able to accomplish what they've been able to accomplish here, but I understand why they got the money. when you see, you just got to watch this video. I'm serious. You're going to be like, whoa. If it's as real as it looks in the video, this is going to be incredible. It really, really is. So just watch the video. I haven't linked up in the show notes tonight. You can't miss this one. All right, go watch it. Spend the 2 minutes to watch the video. Come back. Drop me an email. Tell me what you think. Do you believe it? Do you believe what they're showing is the real deal? I want to hear from you. All right. Okay, this next article, free speech activists who rely on cloud computing to get around China's Great Firewall are under attack. There's been some backlash, not only from the basically providers of some of this service and basically stopping these companies from using their services to try to barrel around the Great Firewall. But now it appears that some of these services are under denial of services attack and are basically threatened with extinction because of the cost they're running up on their bandwidth bill. And this is China has basically brought out the big guns, one particular organization, greatfire.org, which began creating mirror sites in 2013 and now has 10, including a copy of Google, an uncensored version of the Chinese microblog website Weibo, and a news website called Boxin that is often critical of Chinese governments, according to a person who identifies as a spokesperson for Greatfire. They're using Amazon and Akamai, and right now with this denial of service attack, Greatfire is in trouble. And basically what they're providing is a virtual network that allows the Chinese people to barrel in encrypted, making the traffic not look like web traffic, but but basically be able to get around the firewall and get access to stuff that the Chinese government doesn't allow them to get to now. There's another group called Lantern. It depends on what are called, well, they basically use CDNs, and basically they help businesses and, the CDNs are basically high-speed data servers, and that allows an activist to be able to go through and bounce through a CDN to actually get to actual content that they're looking for. Reporters Without Borders as well uses a variety of different services. Cloudflare, which is a company that actually helps you with denial, mitigate denial services attacks, which has a great product, by the way. They've actually had to stop some of these folks like Lantern and so forth from using their service because it was starting to, they were starting to be negatively impacted because of, some of these tactics to try to take these networks down. But this is an interesting read here. On how this, bypassing the firewall really works. And the Chinese are kind of limited too because they are, if they block too much, it could stop commerce and cause them problems. So, their hands are kind of tight. So now they're basically using these denial of service attacks to try to shut down the services while at the same time kind of leaving most of the gateways open for commerce to continue out of China. But I'm sure where there's a will, there's a way. They'll find a way around it. But feel bad for these groups that are providing access to the Chinese people that want to get access to websites that they can't otherwise. It's too bad that they're being basically blocked. All right, there's an article over on hothardware.com. The GoDaddy IPO is expected to value internet domain register at $2.87 billion. Of course, GoDaddy is the world's largest ICANN-accredited internet domain register with more than 59 domain names under its management. And again, they filed for their IPO of at least 22 million shares, expected price between $17 and $19 a pop. On the higher end, that would put the value again at $2.87 billion. They would also raise up to $418 million, the net worth of 22 million Class A shares, or potentially more if the underwriters of the IPO, underwriters of the IPO decided to buy more shares. So 25.3 million shares could be up for grabs here. So this is exciting stuff. Don't know when this is going to happen. I'll be honest with you here. I'm going to buy stock. And I'm not an accredited investor, so I'm probably not get in on the IPO, but I'm going to get in as early as possible and probably buy a stack. This brand is a great brand, and even though they're a sponsor here, I think they're doing a good job, and they've lost the jiggle and are bringing some paying attention to their core business, and I think they're going to do well. So. We'll see how this goes, but I'm excited to see what this IPO is going to bring to them. Let's see if they got 12.7 million customers, and I know what percentage of those this show brought to GoDaddy. We got a good number there. We do. That's an interesting. I can almost figure out the percentage. That's kind of cool, isn't it? Hey, you guys want to throw me some shares? I'll take some on the IPO. Yeah, good luck with that, Todd. Our Google, Intel, and Tag Heuer have teamed up on a luxury smartwatch. Sometime October, November, they are going to be announcing a watch. So if you're a Tag Heuer fan, it's partnership with the... Both Google and Intel should bring a pretty good product to the space, especially if the Tag Heuer, the Swiss watchmakers are basically behind design. I think it could end up being a nice smartwatch. So we'll keep an eye on that. Let's see here. Singapore ISP has introduced home 2 gig broadband video streaming phone service for, get this, $65 a month. Ah. 2 gigs for $65 a month. That's just simply incredible. It tells you how far behind we are here in the U.S. Over on fishhook.firstlook.org, according to the article, the U.S. threatened Germany over Snowden, the vice chancellor said. German vice chancellor Sigmar Gabriel said this week in Hamburg that the U.S. government threatened to cease sharing intelligence with Germany if Berlin offered asylum to NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden or otherwise arranged for him to travel to that country. They told us that they would stop notifying us of plots and other intelligence matters. Whoa. That's putting the old strong arm on him. There had been, or has been, a sustained debate in Germany on whether to grant asylum to Snowden, and a major controversy arose last year when a parliamentary committee investigating NSA spying divided as to whether to bring Snowden to testify in person and nearly refused at the behest of Merkel government. In response to the audience interruption, Gabriel claimed that Germany would be legally obligated to extradite Snowden to the U.S. if he were on German soil. So looks like the Germans got strong armed there. I can tell you, Snowden makes the wrong move, someone's going to get him. He'll be face down in a ditch somewhere or a black hood over his head and we'll never hear from him ever again. Oh, that is, that's probably the likely scenario. He'll go to some deep cave somewhere and don't want to be that guy. All right. There's a cool article over on 2cents.lifehacker.com. How to use social media accounts to become a money-saving ninja. And I didn't know some of this was available. So here's some tips here. And this might be worth the price of you guys becoming an insider. I might save you some money here. So when you're on Twitter, the hashtag is used on all popular social media platforms as a way to quickly search for specific topics. But when it comes to using hashtags to find deals and coupons, it's often used incorrectly. So while Twitter is the gold standard for finding deals by hashtag, you also have to have, you also have decent results on Facebook. So here's what you need to search for. You have to go pound and then the product name and then pound deal or pound coupon in a search term. So if you basically do a pound GoDaddy, pound deal or pound coupon, you're going to find all kinds of deals off. Same thing with pound store name. / and then space deals or store name coupon. So there's a variety of ways you can search to find deals. And so this is a good idea here. If you're trying to save cash, that's a way to maybe to find some deals, especially on a particular product. I do it all the time. I search for deals and then try to find discount codes because almost all e-commerce sites, they have a place to enter a coupon. And so you got to try, right? If you can save a few bucks and you use someone's promo code, it's a good idea. All right. Sony has introduced in Chicago and New York and Philadelphia their new live streaming TV service. And if you live in one of those cities, you can go try for yourself on the PlayStation 3 or PlayStation 4. There's a 7-day free trial, but if you're one of the billions of us that live outside of those three sites, there's a video for you to check out on Engadget. And I'll have the link up in the show notes, but you can see a short demo video of what the service looks like, 2.5 minutes. But very, very cool. And so again, it's a, if you use the PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, you'd be able to get access to this TV deal again in Chicago, New York City, or Philadelphia. All right. Those are the cities that they've rolled out to. Over on Dvorak Uncensored, there's a guy that talks about his setting up a four solar panel grid, and basically how he designed his own automated system to basically track the sun. And this is pretty slick what this guy has done, and I'll have the link up in the show notes for you to check out. And I know many of you are sending me emails asking about solar stuff that I've been talking about in the shows. This is kind of another way to maybe build a small system to have in your backyard that wouldn't cost you an arm and a leg, but maybe something you could put together yourself. Over in space.com, there's a very interesting article. And I was like, really kind of blown away here by a couple of things that they did. They were looking for a moon crater. And let me turn this off because it's starting to play. They were looking for a moon crater from the giant lunar crash in 2013. And they finally found it. And what they've done to find it is absolutely brilliant. Now, the NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter is circling the moon. And it's basically taking pictures. And that instrument, takes swaths of images. And it's not super wide. But what happened was that the folks at JPL, who had basically recorded the impact, they went back to the LRO team and said, here's the general area, here's the coordinates. Can you basically take a picture of the impact area? And when they did, they didn't find what they were looking for. But what they've been doing is, because they're circling the moon and they've been doing this for a while, they're taking the before picture and they're taking the new picture and they're putting them on top of one another. And then they're running a computer logarithm on it, and they can see changes in the two images. So just imagine if you could take and the best example is if I can stay perfectly still, and those of you that are watching, you see I'm holding up a pen, and for those of you that are listening, just imagine holding a pen up in front of your face. Now, if I could stay perfectly still and not move an ounce, and someone took a picture of me, and then that pen was put down, and I was back in the same position, and they took another picture of me. Let's say that was because the moon is very static. Any change on the moon would be easy to see, right? So in the case here, I'm holding the pencil up. You can see it now and it's down. But imagine this is the moon and you've thrown a rock or you've thrown a spacecraft at it and it's hit the ground. There's going to be a big change in the dirt profile. So they could take and toggle those two pictures. They don't even have to run a logarithm on it. They could toggle those two pictures and see that there was something had changed in the picture and there would be a delta. So basically what the scientists did is that they automatically developed this logarithm to search for craters in before and after pairs. And because the LRO is flying in an orbit that basically has, they're looking at the same swaths again and again and from a degrees and settings position, it was very easy for them to find it. And it took them a couple of months because, the way the LRO's orbit set up, but they don't, they're only on the same part of the moon maybe once a month. So it was, this thing was amazing what they were able to come up. We watch this video, you're going to say, oh, those were some smart buggers there, taking a very, complex problem and yet being able to use just some natural techniques to be able to find this impact area. And what a cool way to see changes on the moon. Very, very smart. And again, the LRO mission has been studying the lunar surface since 2009. And so it's really, really a cool article for me. I was like, wow, this is good stuff. It's the kind of article I like to read. The Bigelow Aerospace Inflatable Habitat is ready for its trip to the space station. This is, again, a new inflatable addition to the International Space Station is ready for its close-up. NASA officials viewed the Bigelow Aerospace Bigelow Expandable Activity Module at the company's facility in Las Vegas on March 12th, and it's scheduled to depart later this year for NASA Space Kennedy in Florida, then blast towards the space station atop a SpaceX Falcon 9 booster. So I haven't remembered what the exact reason for this expandable space habitat was. It supports NASA's plans in the realm, which only leads to putting boots on Mars. So it's part of the ability to test an inflatable habitat and see how it's going to stand up to the rigors of space. So it's pretty cool. I'd love to read more on how they're actually going to deal with this thing. It's basically going to be attached to the International Space Station. I don't know if I'd want to be in this sucker initially without a spacesuit on, but it's going to be curious to see how they test this thing and how they actually, maybe it's just going to be attached to the station and it won't actually be, maybe someone's not actually going to get into it. They're just going to have it attached and inflated and see how it does in the confines of space. All it takes is one mini micro piece of space junk to blow a hole in one of these things. But very, very, very cool stuff here. So link will be up in the show notes on this. Oh, they are going to attach it to... they are going to attach it to the International Space Station. That's curious. I would not think that they would do that. They'd actually get into this thing. We'll see. All right. Link will be up in the show notes. You guys can read through on your own. Okay. Cam Studio. This is a product that's been around a long time. And if you're a Mac user, you may want to check this product out. It's basically kind of an inexpensive video switcher. And it's got some effects and it has screen annotations. They can do some screen capturing with it too, and AVI and FLV. But it's a no-nonsense tool that can record and annotate on-screen audio and video, activities to create online videos, educational materials, personal greeting, and much, much more. So definitely check out Cam Studio. I used it years ago, but surprised they're still in dev on it. Google's got a new system. Last week, a trio of Google researchers published a paper on a new artificial intelligence system dubbed FaceNet. FaceNet, Skynet? Why did they call it FaceNet? Anyway, it claims to represent the most accurate approach yet to recognize human faces. FaceNet achieved near 100% accuracy on popular facial recognition data sets labeled Faces in the Wild, which included more than 13,000 pictures of faces from across the web. Trained on a massive 260 million image data set, FaceNet performed with better than 86% accuracy. So the approach Google researchers took goes beyond simply verifying whether two faces are the same. Its system can also put a name to the face and even present collections of faces that look the most similar or the most distinct. Scary, scary, scary. Artificial intelligence to detect faces. Don't you guys remember here a number of months ago when they said that the Arctic ice was the best it had been in a long time? Well, there's an article out on the New York Times today saying the coverage of Arctic ice shrank to a winter low. They said there was less ice covering in the Arctic this winter than any year since satellite measures began nearly four decades ago. Researchers said Thursday the National Snow and Ice Data Center, a government-sponsored research group, said in late February, ice cover in the Arctic Ocean reached its maximum. Okay. Said that in late February, ice cover in. Okay, let's read this carefully. The National Snow and Ice Data Center, a government-sponsored research group, said that in late February, ice cover in the Arctic Ocean reached its maximum 5.61 million square miles, which is about 7% less than the average from 1981 to 2010, and about 1% less than the previous lowest year, 2011. The center said that changes in the jet stream created warmer than normal conditions on the Pacific side of the Arctic, while the extent of the Arctic sea ice is naturally variable. It has been generally declining over the past several decades as the region warms more quickly than other parts of the planet. But they said something that I thought we saw something last year where the winter coverage was the largest. I'm confused. You know, one says it was the most, another said it was the least. Coverage of Arctic ice shrinks to a winter low. Very, very odd. What else have I got here? Okay. If you're thinking about an Apple Watch, you may want to wait a little bit because Gazelle is introducing a Google Watch buying program. They seem to think that a number of people that buy Apple Watch will be dissatisfied with it and will want to get rid of it and try to basically recover some money. So they feel that they'll be in the used Apple Watch business pretty, pretty quickly. So that's kind of an interesting move. And, of course, you can buy, used cell phones and so forth on Gazelle. But they feel they'll be in the business for Apple Watch pretty quickly after the introduction. Also, HBO, Showtime, and Sony want to buy fast lanes for their web TV services. And really, this is going against everything in the net neutrality order. But online television, we know, is taking off in a major way, and some of the biggest providers are looking for assurances that they can keep delivering their content reliably. According to the Wall Street Journal, HBO, Showtime, and Sony have all been speaking with internet providers, including Comcast, about the possibility of being treated as a specialized service, separating them out from other internet traffic and essentially giving them a fast lane to consumers. The fast lanes are explicitly prohibited under the FCC's new net neutrality rules. These fast lanes actually fall in a strange gray area that yet to be explored. So the FCC has carved out an exception for special services that don't provide wide access to the internet, such as voice IP and heart monitors. Those services, therefore, are exempt from net neutrality rules. So they're trying to Tiger wristwatch. And did I pronounce Tag Heuer wrong? I thought it was Tag Heuer. It's Tiger. Someone in the chat room said I apparently pronounced it wrong. Okay. I've always thought it was Tag Heuer. Oh, funny. The guy in the interview said Tag Heuer too. So, all right. But anyway, so HBO, Showtime, and Sony want these fast lanes. And so we'll see where this leads. Some want it, some don't. Richard Branson hints at Virgin Electric cars to rival Tesla. He says, we have teams of people working in electric cars. So you never know, you may find Virgin competing with Tesla in the car business as we do in the space business. We'll see what happens. So that's kind of a curious statement. At least 70,000 routers that ISPs gave to the customers are vulnerable to hacking. So definitely please go over and take a look at this list. If it's one of these routers is on your desktop or in your house, I would recommend going to online and buying a replacement router and basically sending this one of these back to the company that you're renting it from. Specifically, these are ADSL, the D-Link DSL 2750 Echo ADSL modem is one of the devices. The ZTE Corp, the ZTE H108N is another ADSL modem suffering from the same security vulnerability. What other? There was one other here. Well, there's a whole list of them. Two pictures. So please, go through and look at this. These are routers that have been given out by ISP since about 2011. So there's a pretty big list here of different devices. D-Link, Sitecom, what else? Fiber Home, Digisol, Observa Telecom. So there's, again, a variety of devices here that are affected. D-Link, Asus, Alcatel, Belkin, Zaxel, Netgear as well. Wow, it's a huge list. and get specific ADSL modems that have some, or routers that are handed out by the ISPs. Routers, basically, it plugs into your ADSL line. They say that if you're trying to go to private mode in OS X Safari, be aware there's a bug. And whatever, if you, even if you're in private browsing, hoping to keep everything that you're doing away from prying eyes, OS X Safari is now still, there's a bug writing basically a log file to /library/safari/webpageicons.db file. And that database file can be opened by an SQLite browser. And basically, you presented a full list of URLs that anyone has went to, including those that were open while browsing in private mode. So be aware of that. So you want to probably look for that file. Users can certainly trash that database. Again, webpageicons.db. And that will definitely remove that search history. But private browsing in Safari is not necessarily private. That file does reside on your computer, okay? All right, Microsoft is saying that the Windows 10 upgrades for pirates will be unsupported. So there's a little bit of controversy here and a little bit of questions being asked. Specifically, and let me look at the time. I guess we're going to be long tonight. But when Microsoft confirmed we'll offer free Windows 10 upgrades to pirates worldwide, of course, a lot of us were surprised. I wasn't necessarily. But VentureBeat has been trying to get more details from the company, which disclosed that after PCs with pirated copies of Windows 7 and Windows 8 are upgraded, Windows 10, they will remain in a non-genuine status and Microsoft will not support them. With Windows 10, although, non-genuine PCs may be able to upgrade to Windows 10. The upgrade will not change the genuine state of the license, a Microsoft spokesperson told VentureBeat. Non-genuine Windows is not published by Microsoft. It's not properly licensed, supported by... So why are they going to let them pay for 10 but not give them a genuine state of the license? It doesn't make any lot of sense. So there's more questions to be answered. So they're saying after pirate upgrades to Windows 10, does this non-genuine version expire and become unusable after a certain period of time? Does no support mean no security updates? So a lot of questions remain on the upgrade for pirates for Windows 10. For those of you super geeks out there, new light bending device critical to next gen supercomputers has been developed by some scientists at the University of Texas, El Paso. Oh my goodness. And the University Central Florida, UCF, again, have developed a new light bending device, which allows a more effective means through which data can rapidly transmit through electronic circuit boards. If you take the fiber and you bend it too tight, what happens is that the light kind of like doesn't like to bend as fast. For better words, the material lets some of it escape, bringing the amount of the light level down at the output, reducing speed and so forth. But they find a way to make tighter curves. So this is pretty cool stuff. For the geeks out there, it's a worthy read. For those of you that live in Europe, GCHQ is advising organizations to consider stripping staff of smartphones and memory sticks in order to make themselves less exposed to cyber attacks. The Device and Intelligence Agency, CESG, Communication Electronic Security Group, their information of search arms comes against a backdrop of increased concerns about the theft of IP data. They're basically telling companies board up Windows and take away the mobile devices and anything that has an in-out activity type of stuff with the external computers and so forth. Oh my goodness. Put boards on Windows to try to stop cybersecurity spying. It's crazy. Wow. Nailing wood over Windows. That's actually a recommendation. Simply incredible. All right. They've been doing some testing on solid state drives. And they're finding that solid-state drives last quite a bit longer than what they expected. The Samsung 840 Pro, which I love those SSDs, which manages more than 2.4 petabyte of data before it dies, was kind of at the top of the list. So just be aware, though, that when these SSDs die, they die. They don't go in like segments or sections. They just flat out quit in these tests that they've been doing. So always have a good backup plan if you're using SSDs, especially using them very, very heavily. Folks that are running large server state, basically large server farms, may want to reconsider some of the SSD switchover because of this. Like when these drives go, they go, unless you have a really, really good recovery plan, all right? Next article up. French government starts blocking websites with views the government doesn't like. And this is amazing. The Minister of France, with no court review or any type of due process, ordered five websites to not only be blocked in France, but that anyone who visit any of those sites get redirected to a government website that basically says you're being redirected to this official website since your computer was about to connect with a page that provokes terrorist acts and or condones terrorism publicly. Wow. They didn't give a list of the sites that they did this to, but when the government starts blocking websites and changing where they land, you think about that for a few minutes. It's pretty serious stuff. New cars sold in the EU will soon be able to call the emergency services without human intervention. A new law approved by MEP on Tuesday will make the so-called e-call system mandatory for all new car models sold in the EU from April of 2018. E-call uses Europe-wide 112 emergency number to call emergency services automatically in the case of a crash. So they basically want to make this happen so the car will call emergency services even if the driver cannot. So it sounds like a pretty cool idea and a good plan. Over in Gizmodo, there's a good, very, very long article. An astronaut has answered questions about life aboard the International Space Station. So that's very, very cool here. Last week, astronaut Butch Wilmore was on the International Space Station. He's back now, and he went online and answered a huge number of questions. Link will be up in the show notes for you to review that. You know, Cisco, I think we all saw some of the things that were going on with Cisco gear, basically Cisco gear being tampered with. Cisco is now going to ship its equipment to empty houses to dodge product interdiction. So basically, Cisco is working with their customers to drop ship the gear that customers have been ordered to locations that maybe wouldn't be flagged in some sort of automatic redirection type of thing. And they're actually encouraging customers as well to come directly to the dealer or the factory to pick up their product. It's one of the ways they're trying to mitigate some of the things that potentially happened, some of the allegations that were made about back doors being put in their electronics. So link will be up in the show notes on that. Tesla Model S update makes it impossible to drive far from chargers. Basically, the car now, the new navigation update, is going to look at all the chargers within a region a vehicle is in. It's going to find out which ones are under heavy use, which ones are open, and it's basically going to protect the owner from driving into a location where he doesn't have enough power to get back to a charger. And this update will go out in the next couple of weeks, and is supposed to reduce range anxiety amongst owners. Sales of streaming music top CDs and basically in a flat year. It's pretty amazing. $2.8 billion apparently has been spent on services like Spotify and Pandora. And for the first time ever, sales of streaming music have basically topped CD sales. I don't think this should come as any surprise to anyone, but $2.9 billion with Pandora, Spotify, and all the, again, streaming music services. The FCC slapped Verizon's hand. They fined him for $3.4 million for having like a six-hour outage for folks not being able to call 911 via their network. About 3,000 911 calls were not able to be made. There don't appear to be any deaths that happened during the outage, but they got about basically one day of profit fine. Also, the president has signed a order demanding that the government reduce carbon emissions by 40% and over the next decade. So we'll probably see a lot more solar going on to government buildings as things move forward and different things to mitigate carbon offset. Hackers basically traveled to Vancouver this past couple of days, and they've been winning big money and being able to exploit a variety of different operating systems, browsers, and so forth. So far, they've won $320,000 by finding holes in a variety of different services like IE, Firefox, being able to hijack PCs. They found holes in Adobe Flash and Reader. But anyway, taking home in the first day $320,000 in exploit money. Amazon's just got permission from the FAA to start testing its delivery drones in the United States. Congratulations on that. So again, limited testing, and didn't think they were going to get it at all, but they did. Tesla now can resume car sales in New Jersey. New Jersey Governor Christie just signed a law that will allow Tesla to start selling its vehicles again. So this is a good move by the governor to allow competition in the space. So it'd been interesting to see if he hadn't signed it, what would have happened. All right, that takes me through all the articles tonight. Just a few more than I probably should have had in. But I do want to go into some emails that have come in since the last show. You guys are starting to some sense of stuff again, which is good. I appreciate it when you send articles to me. Got an email here from Andy. This was supposed to be in the right folder. That was supposed to be over in that folder. That wasn't a listener. That one's not either. How did that get there? Okay. I got an email from Jack. He says, "Hey Todd, when I saw a 20-39% efficiency improvement in solar output using Adreno, I thought of you. I know you don't use batteries in your solar system, but this might make it worthwhile." And so, Jack, I'm going to be honest with you. As soon as they have batteries available, probably going to do it. Okay. I want to be able to go off the grid. It's a ways away, definitely would like to be able to do that. Also got an email here from Jeff talking about Comcast may join Apple's TV streaming service. The rumor is over the last couple of days that Apple is going to be launching a TV streaming service later this fall. So that's big news. Got an email from Russell. He says, "Todd, if I understood you correct, with the taxpayer-funded tax breaks, your payoff was 38 months. And without it, it would have been something like 72 months. This will still work fine in Hawaii, but it would be 9.5 to 18 years for those elsewhere when they only last about 20 years. And the panels last longer than 20 years, but they definitely, each year, the amount of power they put out drops. And the inverter is about 5 to 10 years. The inverters are actually warranted for 10 years. So, you know, if we do the quick math here, Russell, I think if without the taxpayer... without the tax refund, so if we take the price of my system and divide it by my bill, yeah, it would have been about 72 months. You're right, about 72 months for payoff, and versus 38 months without the refund. I understand your point from a dollar standpoint, but I really want you to think about this from a different perspective. If you're able to put a system on your roof, and let's say it still takes, let's say it takes 9 years. Let's say you're paying 10 cents. And so it's good, yeah, 3 point, yeah, so at least 10 years to pay off the system. You still get 10 years worth of free energy. Now, again, you have to live in the house for 20 years to get the benefit. Or you put it on and then sell that as a, you know, an X makes, you increase the house value to get your money out of it. But for me, really, the upfront money was a big amount of cash. but just having the extra $400 to $450 a month going into my checking account, irregardless of having paid the system off and put the money up front, is to me is like sticking it to the man every time the bill comes. It really, you know, I really got sick and tired of having to pay 36 cents a kilowatt. And I understand most of you are not in that situation paying that high of a power, but I know some business owners are paying 11 and 12 cents. So, you know, if you look at it that way too, you know, it definitely, and I think solar panels are going to come down in price over the next 5 years. So maybe you won't need the tax benefits. I'll be honest with you. I'm very pleased with the system at this point, and I'm very, very happy. And the panel should last 20 to 25 years for sure. Okay, I got an email from Evan. He says, hey, Todd, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP, is like SOPA in disguise. If it's authorized, we'll literally be giving lobbyists and bureaucrats the ability to write internet policy in secret. So he says, basically go out and speak out about TPP. He shared me some links or some places where I can go sign a petition and so forth. Anyway, take action to stop the fast track for the TPP. And he sent me to link me to a site, fightforthefuture.org. And I'll have that link up in the show notes for everyone to check out. All right. Hope you had a good time. A little long today. I apologize. Just had a lot of content. And we'll try to keep it under control content time-wise here as we go forward. But thank you so much. You can send your comments to the show at geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. And, of course, the you can leave an audio comment. You can do that via a link on the website as well. Get signed up for the newsletter. Make sure you subscribe to the show. And if you want, become an insider, geeknewscentral.com/insider. If I've provided value for you tonight. And try some of those search queries out before you buy something next time. See if you can save some cash. Every time you do so, think about me helping you save that cash and maybe throw some of that cash back at the show. Again, we'll see everyone on Monday, audio only, and headed towards the East Coast. If I end up having some extra time to do something on Friday, I'll let everyone know in the Washington, D.C. area. But as of right now, I don't think so. Based on my schedule, but everyone, thanks for being here. Everyone take care. We'll see you on Monday. Audio only. Aloha.